So now from verses 10 to 15, we are going through the process of meditation, and the first thing that Krishna speaks about is known as Anta Anga Sadhanam. Anta Anga Sadhanam means the specific disciplines to be observed just before we start the meditation process. There are certain things that we need to put into order before we sit down and start the process of meditation. And the topics that Krishna will cover is Desha, meaning the place or the environment where we sit for meditation. Kala he does not discuss, but we have briefly discussed this last week. That is the time of meditation. Asanam, the seat, the actual place where we sit for meditation. Sharira Stiti, meaning what is the posture that we should adopt during meditation. Then he will talk about Prana Samyam, which means the evenness of breathing. Indriya Nigraha, the withdrawal of the sense organs from the external world. Mano Nigraha, withdrawal of the mind from the world. And finally, he will speak about Buddhi Nishchaya, which means intellectual conviction on the role of meditation as a spiritual sadhana. We should be very clear about why meditation is necessary in our sadhana. So all these topics which I mentioned are not systematically presented, and some will be presented also and repeated in different verses again. But these are generally the topics that he will cover. And verse 10 that we covered last week, he spoke about this meditation that we engage on should be satatam. Satatam meaning should be practiced constantly. It should be done daily on a regular basis. Therefore, one should not treat meditation as a part-time hobby, something that we take up in our spare time or towards the weekend when we are free. But if you are serious about meditation, you have to do this on a daily basis. Whether you do it for 2 minutes or 5 minutes or 10 minutes, that is irrelevant, but it should be done on a daily basis. Second thing he said, the place that we choose for meditation must be Rahasi. In verse number 10, Rahasi means a secret place, a secluded place. Not necessarily you have to go into the cave or mountains or forest to meditate, but what he means here is a quiet place that is away from all types of distraction. So find that place in your home. If you want to go to a temple, you want to go to an ashram, by all means do. But if you can find this place in your home, it will be better, which is not away from all types of distractions. Third, he also spoke about Ekaki, which means meditation should be practiced alone, not in groups. You may learn meditation in group meditation, but to practice it, you should not do it with others. Do it all by yourself. And the reason for that is, again, to avoid distractions. And what should you control in meditation? What is it that you are supposed to do? He says, Yata Chitta Atma. Number one, we have to be a master of the Atma. Atma here does not mean Sachidananda. What does it mean? Last week we discussed this. Yatta Chitta Atma. Yatta means control. Be a master of the Atma. is the body. Atma here refers to the body. One should not get any distraction from the body. So the body must be totally under your control at the time of meditation. How, he will explain later as we get in the verses. Chitta here means mind. Your mind also should be in your control. So, yatta, control, what? Chitta, the mind, and atma, the body. The right posture you should adopt so your body doesn't cause any discomfort and your mind should be slowly withdrawn from all your worldly activities. And this is only possible for you to withdraw your mind during meditation. If you recall, prior to sitting in meditation, you also must lead a disciplined life. So, meditation is not trying to discipline your mind. Meditation is having disciplined the mind, you sit in meditation. And thus, it also depends, the success of our meditation will depend on what type of lifestyle we lead. If we lead a sensuous lifestyle, always pursuing all our desires, obviously that same mind which is always full of desires is not able to sit quietly in meditation. So therefore, earlier Krishna also spoke about having the right lifestyle, which he will speak again in the next few verses. And Krishna says finally in verse number 10, Nirashir. Ashi means desire. Nirashi means one should be free from any binding desires. Again, all this can be cultivated if we lead a disciplined lifestyle. And at that stage of meditation, we must practice to surrender all our desires to God. Saranagati, surrender. Mentally hand over your desires to God. And second, aparigraha. Parigraha is possessions. Aparigraha is non-possessions. Not that we should not possess anything, but our mind should be withdrawn away from whatever we have as possessions. So, in terms of all your relationships, in terms of all your possessions, mind should be withdrawn from all this. And finally, we came to verse number 11 when he spoke about the place where we sit for meditation. He said, having established Suchau, they say is a place, Pratishtapya, having established your place of meditation, which must be what? It must be Suchau, which means it must be clean. And I mentioned that when he says the place must be clean, we are talking about spiritually and physically. Physically clean so that there are no insects, etc., ants and all roaming around the place. That is physically clean. How do we make it spiritually clean? Put some pictures of devatas, put some pictures of saints or sages. Put anything that helps to produce a spiritually conducive environment. So that's what we mean by Suchau. Make the place physically and spiritually clean. Then what do we sit on? If you look at the last line which we discussed last week, verse number 11, asanam should be chaila, ajina, kusha, uttaram. Uttaram means place one on top of the other. And what should we place one on top of the other? First, you should place kusha grass, and we discuss the properties of kusha grass last week. Why he mentions kusha grass? There is a mythology also which we discussed last week. So kusha grass layer on top of that is ajina, which means skin of a deer or a tiger. And why also we must put that deer skin or tiger skin also we discussed last week. And on top of that we put a chaila, which is a piece of cloth. And the order we must note, it is kusha grass, skin and cloth. Why? Because kusha grass is prickly, skin of tiger and or animal also is not so comfortable to sit on, so on top of that we put a cloth. And last week, if you remember, or rather somebody could have asked, where are we to get all these things, and are we really supposed to sit on all these things? So what is the answer to that? Then why does he say sit on kusha grass, put a tiger skin, then put a cloth? What is he trying to tell us symbolically, actually?
Make yourself comfortable.
Exactly. Make your seat comfortable. So just like tiger skin, etc., repels insects, deer skin repels insects, sit on something which is clean, which is not dirty, and sit on a layer of cloth or cushion or whatever it is that makes you comfortable. The idea is not to sit on kusha grass or deer skin, but to sit on anything that gives you comfort. Why? Why should you sit on something comfortable?
Yeah.
Again, you minimize all the distractions. So it is not necessary that you must sit on ground. If you can sit on the floor, it's good. But you can sit on the chair, you can sit on the bed, you can sit anywhere you want, which minimizes all types of distractions.
And spray insect repellent.
Yeah. Now we got the, what do you call that? Mopico, whatever it is. Yeah. You spray that. Sorry? Yeah. Sorry, what was on the ground?
They were sitting on the ground. On
okay,
the
okay,
roof.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry.
Right.
So above the soil, so the grass was necessary.
Right.
And then the skin to keep away moisture.
Correct, exactly. Insects and all that, yeah. So those saints and all who used to, early days or so, the ancient people used to meditate by sitting on the ground, and saints and sages used to meditate in caves and forests. They followed this. The idea was to avoid insects and all this, and to keep the place clean and comfortable. Okay. In fact, there is a incident also written in the Gospel of Sri Ramakrishna, when once he was visited at his ashram by a very famous sage called Totapuri, and in Totapuri's ashram there were 700 monks, and Totapuri told Ramakrishna that the monks were required to meditate every day for hours. And those beginners who came, first of all, they were allowed to sit on soft cushions. So they were allowed to make themselves comfortable because they were meditating for hours. They sat on soft cushions. As they progressed in meditation, then they were told to sit on something harder, and eventually they were told to sit on the ground. So it is a process by process. The idea is whatever we want to sit on has got to be comfortable. Okay, and what else about the place where we sit for meditation? In the third line of verse number 11, he says, Na ati uchritam, na ati nicham. Na ati means, uchritam means, the place where you sit for meditation. Uchritam means it should not be too high. So don't sit on something which is very high, which will cause you to be very conscious about losing your balance. Right? Again, all this is to minimize distractions to your meditation. So your body should be comfortable. Sit on something which is na ati uchritam, not too high. At the same time, it must be Na ati nicham. It must not be too low, because if it is too low to the ground, then you have the problem of insects, ants, etc., which cause a disruption to your meditation. So again, it is just like the Goldilocks and the three bears. You know, the porridge must not be too hot, must not be too cold. The bed must not be too hard, must not be too soft. Basically, each of us have got to find that suitable place, comfortable place that minimizes all types of distractions. And thus Krishna says, you in the second line, Atmanaha. Atmana here means does not mean again the soul, as Atma does not need a place to sit on. Atma is all pervading. So here Atma means your place of meditation. It should be stiram, it should be firm. It should be firm, and you should have your own place of meditation. So whatever you choose to sit on, whatever cloth or blanket or whatever you choose to sit on, do not share it with others. Your place of meditation should not be shared with others. Make it your own place to sit, and it should be firm, meaning it should not be shaky, right? Again, should not cause any discomfort to the body. So now with this verse, Krishna has covered desha, the place, asanam, how we should prepare and sit ourselves for meditation, and we also discussed kala, the time. Now let us look at further what he mentions about this process of meditation in verse number 12. Okay, in verse number 12 now he says, tatra asane upavisya. Asane means the place where you are sitting. Upavisya means sitting. Tatra, on that seat, after you have made your body comfortable, you have made sure the environment is clean and spiritually charged, then what should you do? Yatta, control, chitta, indriya. Two things we must bring into our control. Chitta meaning mind. Indriya here meaning the organs, the 10 organs of action and the 10 organs of knowledge. Your 5 jnana indriyas, meaning your eyes, your ears, nose, etc. You should now start to slowly discipline and recall all the senses back. And also your hands, legs, etc. should be firm and still. So yatta means one should withdraw all the activities of the mind, all the activities of the senses. You should withdraw at least for the 5-10 minutes of meditation. Kriya means the functions of the mind, the functions of the senses. One should learn how to withdraw whatever activity that is common to the mind and body in relation to worldly duties and relationships. At least at the time of meditation, you must keep all this attention of the world away from your mind. And how also he will tell us what, how we should do that also. Because once you have chosen to withdraw your mind and your senses away from worldly activities, one should not just leave the mind alone, but you should, what should you do? If you stop your mind from thinking about the world, what happens? It will again run. So what should you do? What? You should turn your focus to focus your mind on something. So instead of the world, you have to turn your mind and try as much as possible. It is a, how you say, it's a tug of war process, because your mind runs to the world, you pull it back. You must try to focus on something. That's why we also discussed that in meditation you should not close your eyes. And he's going to mention then what should you do. Neither should you open your eyes too big, neither should you close your eyes. Because you need to fix your eyes on something, if not your mind will start running. So now Krishna says what you have to do, ekagram. The word ekagram here is very important. If you look at the first line, tatrai ekagram. Ekagram is the mind which is fully sharp and under your control. The mind is said to have different type of moods. In Patanjali's Yoga Sutras, he lists 5 different type of moods that the mind can have. One mood is called Kshipta, K-S-I-P-T-A, Kshipta, which means a mind that is under the sway of the senses. whatever the senses are, that way the mind also runs in that direction. Whatever the eyes want to see, the mind runs in that direction. Whatever the ears want to hear, the mind runs in that direction. That is called a distracted mind, which is overpowered. Why? Because of the rajasic gunas in us. So we are unable to concentrate. That kind of mind is called a chitta, a mind that runs, constantly runs after the senses. The second type of condition of mind is called mudaha, M-U-D-H-A, mudaha, which means a mind that is dull or inactive, which succumbs to the tamasic gunas and which has a tendency to fall asleep or drowse away or be drowsy. That is called mudaha.
Daydream.
Yes, daydream. Third is vikshipta, V-I-K-S-I-P-T-A, which means a mind that is occasionally steady. So it is preoccupied with many ideas. Sometimes you are able to pull it back, sometimes it runs back. So that is called a vikshipta mind, which is partly sattvic, partly rajasic. Sometimes it is dwelling on something spiritual, sometimes it goes back to the world. So it keeps on fluctuating between the world and spiritual things. Then the fifth one is ekagra, which is what Krishna is mentioning here. Ekagra is the... Fourth one. Fourth one is ekagra. At least I know you all are alert. Ekagra, which means the mind is one-pointed, which means a purely sattvic mind. And that mind which is able to withdraw from all the worldly objects, worldly relationships, and focus on God or focus on a flame or focus on anything spiritual. That is called ekagra mind. The ekagra mind has got to be conditioned. How is got to be conditioned again? By your disciplined living. If you lead a disciplined life, your sattvic gunas will be strong, and when you sit for meditation, you will find that you can easily pull your mind back and concentrate it on God. So that is an ekagra mind, which has been conditioned over years of purification and discipline. That mind which is called a sattvic mind. So that's why, again I repeat, meditation is not sitting down and trying to discipline your mind. Meditation is disciplining your mind and sitting down in meditation. Disciplining your mind through the right lifestyle. Cultivating the karma yoga lifestyle, upasana yoga lifestyle, which we have discussed earlier. And finally, ekagra also is not the totally disciplined mind. The highest is called nirudha. N-I-R-U-D-D-H-A, which is totally restrained. And it is beyond, it is in the subconscious state where you don't even have to put in any effort. It is automatically, you sit for meditation, the mind loses itself. So that is the higher state called Nirudha. Now, this ekagrata mind that Krishna is talking about here, later in verse number 19, he will give us a beautiful allegory using a lamp in a windless place. That description of a yogi who's got an ekagra mind is like a lamp in a windless place. When we come to that verse, it's a very beautiful verse, we will discuss that. So Krishna says, now having withdrawn your mind from the world, from all your relationships, from all your possessions, having focused the mind on something spiritual, be it your Ishta Devata, be it a flame, be it the Om symbol, whatever it is, he says, now you practice meditation. For what purpose should we practice meditation? You should practice it for, look at the fourth line in verse number 12, Atma Visudaye. That is the reason why you are practicing meditation. Atma Visudaye. Again, Atma here does not mean the soul. Visudaye means purification. The soul does not need purification. It is the mind that needs to be purified. purified of what? What does the mind need to be purified of? So, it is said in the scriptures that in the initial stage, the mind has got two impurities. One is called malam, M-A-L-A-M, malam. These are unhealthy ways of thinking. All the karma, the desires we have, anger, hatred, jealousy, pride, ego, these all fall under malam, all the impurities of the mind, unhealthy ways of thinking. And the second problem with the mind is, if it is not thinking about impure thoughts, the other problem with the mind is called vikshepa. Vikshepa means the mind which is restless, which is running about here and there, and especially more so in meditation. Now, these two qualities, vikshepa and malam, these have to be removed from the mind. And how do we remove vikshepa and malam from the mind? Vikshepa, as I said, is the distraction or the restlessness of the mind. Malam is the impurities of the mind. These have to be removed at the initial stage, which is called upasana meditation. Do you remember we discussed upasana meditation? What is upasana meditation? You remember we talked about meditation. One is before you get the knowledge of the scriptures, that meditation is called upasana. After getting knowledge of the scriptures, then the second type of meditation is called nididhyasana. Upasana meditation is on a form. It can be on any form that you choose, because the word upasana, upa means near, asana means sitting. So, what are you sitting near? What do you mean by upasana, sitting near what? What does upasana mean?
Prayer.
So, what does it mean? That actually, if you break the words down, upa means sitting
near.
Sorry, asana means sitting. Sorry?
Correct.
So, it's not just physically sitting near the statue, it is bringing your mind mentally to God. That's what we mean by upasana. Through prayers, through recitation of mantras, through offering of flowers, whatever you do, all that is called upasana. It does not mean just sitting near the God form and just throwing flowers like that, when your mind can be in Switzerland. So it means what? Bringing my mind near to God. And for that, I need a form to meditate on. And then after I go through the knowledge of the scriptures, when I understand that God is all-pervading consciousness, then my meditation is called nididhyasana. It is no more on a form, it takes on the formless meditation, which goes beyond form. Because then I realize that God is not just this form, God is much more than this. God is all-pervading. And that is the highest state of meditation. So at this stage, the purpose of upasana, when we are bringing our mind close to God, when we are meditating on a form of God, it helps us to remove the malam, the impurities. It helps us to focus our mind so we overcome the condition of the mind that likes to run here and there, the restlessness of the mind. So it is a way for us to practice. When we sit in front of a God form and fix our mind on God, it helps us to discipline that mind, to stop the mind from being restless, and to also remove the impurities from the mind. The more and more we practice this upasana, the more and more you find that your mind will be under your control. So this has to be a daily practice. Sit down in front of your Ishta Devata and keep on focusing your mind on that God. And you can help yourself by chanting some mantras. For example, if you are meditating on Ganesha, you can chant the Ganesha mantra. If you are meditating on Shiva, chant the Shiva mantra. That way you find for that 5 minutes, 10 minutes, your mind is totally focus on their Ishta Devata, which is called Upasana meditation. And then, after you receive the knowledge of the all-pervading nature of God, after you receive the knowledge that I am not this body, I am the all-pervading soul also, then you have a second problem. Your mind does not have malam, your mind has been controlled or vikshepa. Well, what is your second problem? Now your mind has got no impurities. Now your mind is not wandering away. But now when you close your eyes and try to focus on the formless, you don't sleep, but you have the impurities that are in your subconscious mind. Where did these impurities come from? It is due to your present lifestyle that you have lived, and also the impurities that you carry from past births, which are lying dormant in your subconscious mind. And when you reach the higher state of meditation, it is these impurities in your subconscious mind that will again arise to disturb your meditation. Yes.
So if you meditate,
right,
you can remember all the bad things you did in the last
moment. No. Not that, but whatever negative habits that you have, habits that you have formed over this life, for example, before you reach the state of meditation, you are living a different type of lifestyle from your childhood, from your youth, from etc. So these kind of habits that you have been carrying are already registered in your subconscious mind. And these are the things that will arise. These are called habitual tendencies of the mind. The way we think, the way we behave, etc. These are the ones which are lying as what we call vasanas in your subconscious mind. So at the higher stage of meditation, we have to deal with this also. So that is nididhyasanam, the role of nididhyasanam. We have to remove these habitual tendencies which are in the subconscious mind. We will come to that, but I'm just giving you that information right now. So now, up to verse number 12 here, Krishna proceeds in verse number 13 to speak about the meditation, about the what type of posture when we sit in meditation, how should we sit, what is the posture that we should adopt. Again, ideal posture is of course to sit on the ground, but it is not compulsory because of many people having health problems with their back, with their knees, etc. So we must understand, meditation is not just the posture, but why is posture not so important in meditation? That means where you sit is not important. How you sit is important because it is what affects your mind. If you try to sit uncomfortably on the floor, when you cannot sit on the floor, you are not going to be able to meditate. So it is not where you sit, it is how you sit. And how should you sit now? This is what Krishna is speaking about. Sorry? Where you sit. So make yourself comfortable. How you sit means basically where you sit must be comfortable. Right? And how now should be the posture of your body? That's very important. Verse number 13. Dharayan. The word dharayan means holding. Samam. So you can look at the first line and the second line. Dharayan appears in the second line, holding. Samam, erect. What should be held erect? Three things. Kaya, meaning the body. Grivam, meaning the neck. And Shira, meaning the head. So Kaya, when we talk about body, it means from the hip up to the neck. That is what you mean by body. From the hip up to the neck. That is the body. Griva is the neck. Shira is the head. Therefore, body, neck and head should be held erect in one straight line. 90 degrees angle. Very important. That's why Krishna is pointing out those important things. How we sit. Whether you sit on the floor or sit on the chair, doesn't matter. But you should hold the body, the neck and the head erect in one straight line. Samam, erect. And there are two reasons why you should do this. The first reason is, when you sit erect, you will notice that your breathing also is more smooth. Right? When you sit erect, the flow of your air also, the breathing is more smooth. Number one. Number two, and also if your breathing is smooth, your concentration is better. Number two, when you sit upright, you won't have the tendency to fall asleep. As you notice, once you start sitting in meditation, and if you are not conscious about your body, eventually you find that either you are leaning forward or sideways. So you must be very conscious about your body. Keep it erect, the head, the neck and the body up to the hip. Okay. And what else? Not only just keep it erect, but Krishna says achalam stiraha. Achalam means still and steady. Meaning what? What do you mean by do not fidget your body, do not sway your body from side to side. Keep it still and steady. Don't fidget. Right? And as you find that when you sit in meditation, you might find yourself slowly rocking from side to side. That is not good again for your concentration. So keep it still and steady. Now that we've got the body comfortable, we've got the body erect, we've got it still and steady, now we handle the what we call the mind. What do we do now? How do we bring the mind under our control? So here Krishna says, very important first is where our senses are. And the most powerful sense that can distract us is generally what? The eyes. So here Krishna asks us to concentrate first on the eyes. And what should we do with the eyes? He says, disaha. Disa means direction, various direction. Anavalokayam. Not looking in various directions. So even if you consider that you are holding your head steady, your head is not turning anywhere, but your eyes can have the tendency to flicker here and there. So he's saying, watch your eyes. Hold the eyes also steady. And when he says, how do you hold your eyes steady also, he gives us a tip. Samprekshya, looking only nasikagram at the tip of the nose. Samprekshya, looking only, your eye should be looking only nasikagram at the tip of the nose. Whose nose should you be looking at? Why your nose only?
Because
you're supposed to sit alone in meditation. You're not supposed to have anybody. So, obviously you have to look at your own nose only. Now, the question is, how can you look at your own nose? Is it possible to look at your own nose?
Not comfortable.
Not comfortable. So, again, we have to read the allegorical meaning. What it means is, as if looking in the direction of your nose, meaning the eyes are not totally open, and because if they are totally open, they will have a tendency to flicker around, and they are not totally closed, because then you have a tendency to fall to a beautiful sleep, but just close it halfway as though you are looking in the direction of your nose. So you are not to do meditation on your nose. The meditation is on the object in front of you. But your eyes are to look as if in the direction of the nose, which means the eyelids are closed at least about 3/4 or at least 1/4. Okay? Depending how big or small your nose is. So look at the direction of your nose. Okay? Not look at your nose. Yes.
You know, in
Right.
Don't you have the tendency to blink and then you close and open and then it is so uncomfortable because you can see your eyelashes and everything is everywhere.
You see, that eyes which you lower down, you have to adjust it yourself. That's why everybody who meditates, you have to find your own level of comfort. How much you close your eyes, how much you open your eyes, that depends on you. What you're just saying, basically look in the direction of your nose, meaning don't open your eyes totally big and don't close your eyes totally shut. So leave it at least half open. Okay? And then of course you have the object in front of you, a flame or a Om symbol or Anishta Devata. You need to focus your eyes on that in order to prevent your mind also from running also. Now there's an interesting book I'm reading now. It's written by Radhanath Swami, who is a saint from the Krishna Conscious Movement. Very interesting character. He is a Jewish American, born in America to a Jewish family. But at a very young age, he had a urge for spirituality. He wanted to find God. So at the age of 18, he left his home in America. He hitchhiked across Europe. He visited churches, he visited synagogues, whatever. Then he went to Middle East and visited the mosques. And finally he ended up in India, where he found in the Himalayas what he was seeking for. Now in this section of the book that he writes, he came to one church in Rome. And he was very fascinated by how the priests in Rome, in the church, they meditated on. They also used to sit for hours in meditation, and in order for their mind to be focused, they used to meditate in catacombs. See, catacombs are those rooms which are in the basement of the church, where generally they have some people buried there also. Okay? Now, in this particular church, in the catacombs, people were not buried. They had all the bones and the skeletons of people. There were human skulls. There were bones of people there. That means there were skeletons and there were human skulls. And this priest used to sit there, look at the skulls and meditate. So he asked them, why do you look at all these skulls and skeletons and all and meditate? And they said, because it helps us to concentrate on the impermanence of this body, that one day we will also be like that. So we shift away our focus from attachment to this body and think that one day we will also be like that. And interestingly enough, there was a signboard in front of the skeletons which said, as you are now, the skeletons are telling the monks, as you are now, we used to be. Right? As you are now, we also used to be like that. We had flesh, we had blood, we could move. As we are now, you will be. You see? One day you will also be like us. So to remove that permanence, that attachment to the body, to our possessions, to our family, we need to change, to withdraw our mind and then change the focus of our mind to something which is more permanent, and that is God. So, here Krishna says also that we must concentrate on something. Therefore, don't totally close your eyes in meditation. So, now we have covered desa. We have also discussed kala, the time. Asana, the place where we sit for meditation. Sharira sthita, how is the posture of the body. Indriya nigraha, to withdraw the senses and organs away from the external world. And now Krishna is going to speak about mind now, mano nigraha. So it is one by one. It is very scientific, it is very systematic. First discipline the body, then discipline the senses, then discipline the mind. All these three have got to be under your control. So now there are two more topics which Krishna will discuss. That is mano nigraha, discipline of the mind, and buddhi nischaya. Okay. So now we look at verse number 14. Now, what should be the condition of the mind? Because the mind has disturbances in two ways. the mind generally has disturbance in two ways. And what are the two ways? One is from the past, isn't it? We bring all types of regrets, bitterness, anger, irritation, and especially during meditation, all these emotions can and will surface. Why? Because I mentioned earlier that the mind is a bundle of vasanas. Vasanas meaning the impressions that we have carried forward in past lives and also these lives. And these are in our subconscious mind. So, they remain deep within the mind, and if they don't surface in our day-to-day, why is it that sometimes you find that these experiences, the bitterness, the anger, they do not surface in our day-to-day life, but in our meditation they surface?
You're distracted with so many other things. There are other things for you to do. But if you just concentrate on yourself, you'll be thinking, oh my God, that happened to me. Oh my gosh, I did this. So all the things in the past will come back when you're not distracted by the
anything. Exactly. So in our day-to-day life, we are distracted by so many things, and these emotions remain hidden in our subconscious mind. But at the time of meditation, when you have already withdrawn your mind from the external world, these past bitterness, experiences, anger, etc. will arise. And therefore, how should we handle these past experiences? This is what Krishna is going to talk about. How should we handle? And past experiences, as Krishna will say, we should learn and grow. That is how we handle our past experiences. When we learn to handle past experiences and grow, then they become diluted. But if we do not know how to handle the past, every past can create a disturbance. And therefore, when we learn how to handle these past experiences, they don't create any disturbances in the mind. Therefore, at the time of meditation, at least every painful experience, every failure, every insult, whatever you have, learn to surrender them to the Lord.
Is it only negative emotions and feelings that come
to our mind? Positive? Even positive. Because positive again takes your mind away in that direction. Yeah. You know? Right? So, negative and positive experiences, both learn to surrender and say to Lord, O Lord, you have given me these experiences for what?
For me to learn and grow.
For my inner growth, isn't it? For me to learn and grow. That's why I have these experiences in my life. So therefore, I have no regrets. I don't have any anger towards anyone. I don't have any hatreds towards anyone. I learn from past experiences and surrender them to the Lord. Therefore, past can be good or bad. The past can be good or bad. Good, if I am willing to learn from the past, it can be good. The past can be a burden if I don't learn from it and it triggers in me bitterness, guilt, hatred, irritation. So, the past can be good or bad depending on how you handle it. And in life we have no choice because we meet both good and bad people, unfortunately. And we cannot judge everyone to be perfect. Because if you start to judge everyone, you will fall into a trap. Your mind will keep on judging who is good, who is bad. So what do? Put your faith in those of good character. Put your faith in those of good character, those good people you have met in the past, those who have helped you, those who have been kind, those who have been compassionate to you. At least fix your thoughts on those people and cultivate your own spiritual practice. And remember, especially when you hate anyone, what is the biggest problem? What is the biggest problem? if you direct and think about all the people you hate, all the people who have made you suffer, what is the biggest problem? Forget the one.
That becomes your problem.
That person you hate is having a nice sleep. Who is having the problem? You are having the problem, isn't it? Right, that person is peacefully sleeping, he is happily enjoying. You are directing your hatred towards that person. Who are you killing? You are killing your own self. That's why Lord Buddha said what? Directing anger at anybody is like throwing hot charcoal at a person. You end up burning your own hands. So keep that in mind. The more anger, the more bitterness you have, you are not hurting that person, you are hurting but yourself. So understand, such a person has come into my life so I can learn and grow. And therefore Krishna says here in verse number 14, Prasantatma. Prasantatma. Past is over. Now somebody might say, okay, forget the past. The past doesn't trouble me. But my worry is about what?
Future.
About the future. So as I said, mind is generally torn between two. Either it is the past, if it is not, if it is learn to handle the past, then it is worries about the future. And what should you do about the future?
Don't worry.
Surrender that also to Lord also. Right? As Swami Chinmayananda put it so beautifully, it is the unborn, it is the dead past and the unborn future. The past is already dead and gone. The future is not even born, but you keep on thinking about the unborn future. So, whatever you're going to face in the future is going to be according to the law of karma. You have to understand this. Neither are you going to get more, neither are you going to get less. What is due to you, positive or negative, you will get it. So there is no point to keep on speculating on the future. Right? Even we think such and such a person is getting so prosperous, it is due to his own karma. There is nothing we can do. It is, as the saying goes, you get what you deserve, not what you desire. So keep remembering that. You get what you deserve. As per the law of karma, what is coming to you will come. You get what you deserve, not what you desire. So, pray.
Is it wrong to plan for the future?
You remember what I told you? What's the difference between planning and worry? Is it wrong to plan for the future?
No.
So, what's the difference between planning and worry? Here we are talking about worry. But don't confuse that with planning. So, what's the difference with planning and worry?
Think
something positive when
you
plan. The worry is just don't think about the results. You plan yourself and you do the action according to your plan. Because
whatever will come,
don't worry about it. Yes. So planning is in your control. Worry is not in your control. You can set a time when you want to plan. Can you set a time when you want to worry? Can you say, I want to worry today from 6 to 8 and after that I won't worry? So, planning is in your control. Planning makes you productive. Worrying is not in your control. Worrying makes you defective in your action. Planning makes you effective in your action. So, by all means plan, but don't worry. As you can recall the very important verse in chapter 2 verse 47. The essence of karma yoga, karmani vadikaraste ma paleshu kadachana. Your right is to action, do your duty, do your action, ma paleshu kadachana. You cannot dictate the outcome of your action. The outcome of your action you can only plan, but you can never dictate what is going to be the outcome of your action. Because there are so many factors that control the outcome of your action, including your past karmas also. Okay? So, Krishna says here, therefore, Prasantatma, the past and the future you have to learn to surrender to the Lord. Learn from past experiences and grow and surrender both past and future to the Lord. And therefore, in meditation, don't bring past and future into your mind. And then he says, vigata bhi. Vigata bhi means, vigata means free, free from bhihi, bhih means free from concern, anxiety, worry. Give that all up, surrender that to the Lord. So the past does not disturb me, the future does not disturb me. What is the biggest advantage you have? If the past does not disturb you, the future does not disturb you, what is the biggest advantage you have?
Only got the present to look after.
The present is fully available for you to utilize.
Live in the present.
Otherwise your mind is living in the past or living in the future. Therefore you are never living in the present. You have wasted your opportunity what to do with your present life. So the biggest advantage is the present is fully available for me to utilize. So therefore now once the past and the future is thrown out of your mind and you are living in the present, your meditation is in the present. What else he says? Brahmacharya vritaha. Brahmacharya vritaha. Vritaha means vows. Stitam, be very firm in your vows of brahmacharya. And how is brahmacharya translated here? In this text here? Celibacy. And everybody says sorry. How to follow life of celibacy? Isn't it? We are married people. So we must understand what is the true meaning of brahmacharya. Brahmacharya is not just celibacy. The word brahmacharya here is basically reflecting a student life, brahmachari. Before we become a grihas, before we start a family, prior to that we are a brahmachari. So what is the duty of a student?
Study.
No? To study, right? To study. In this case here we are talking about spiritual study, study of the scriptures. And in order to study, what do you need to do? Discipline yourself. You need to bring discipline into your life so that you can dedicate time and effort to studying the scriptures. So here, brahmachari means all the disciplines we should have in our life. We should lead a disciplined life. Therefore, we have time for prayers, we have time for rituals, we have time to study the scriptures. Otherwise, commonly, every time you ask people, why not? Never come for Gita class?
No
time. But watching Bollywood movie, how many hours? 3 hours. We have ample time for that, no problem. So, lead a disciplined life. Now again, very important, scriptures don't say that you should disregard your worldly affairs. That's why very important thing is, first of all, bring balance into your life. That balance is very important. Dedicate your time to your worldly duties. At the same time, you also have a duty to God. So you should do your duty to your family. You should do your duty to your work. But then do not neglect your spiritual growth. That's why there is a saying, man has become a material giant. In terms of material things, we are prosperous. We have a lot of things. We have cars, television, we have house, we have property, we have bank balance. Man has become a material giant, but a spiritual dwarf. In terms of spirituality, when we have the spare time, then we devote that time to spirituality. It has become a part-time hobby for us. So here Krishna says, brahmachari means bringing that discipline into your life. And the discipline you have to maintain. Also here it means all types of correct relationships also. Understand that primary relationship you have only with three things. That discipline in your mind must be guided by understanding that in your life you have only to cultivate or maintain a relationship with only three things. What is that?
One must be God.
God. Very good.
That's the easiest one.
Guru.
And the parents.
Scriptures. God, Guru and scriptures. Guru, Gita, Gopal. The three G's. Now you have four G's of course, right? The telecommunication, they have four G's now. So I don't know what is the fourth G, but last time we had only three G's. Guru, Gita, Gopal. your relationship must be cultivated in that direction towards God. Anything that progresses you towards God, progresses you towards Guru, progresses you towards scriptures, cultivate that relationship also. So that's why whether you are sannyasa ashram, whether you go away to an ashram and take up total sannyas, or whether you are in the family, in the household, also you can practice this, where you are able to bring that discipline into your life. That's why the word grihas, which means family, that means when we lead a family life, we go through grihas, it does not mean one who is living in the household. The definition of a grihas does not mean one who lives in the household. What does it mean in reality? What does it mean in reality?
You are dealing with day-to-day worldly affairs with everyone, all sorts of relationships.
Right.
With your family as well as the social life with friends. That is, grihastha ashram, you are dealing with different types of problems, day-to-day problems.
So is that the true definition of grihas? Or is there another real definition of grihas? Technically, grihas means one is living in a household with wife, with a spouse, with children, with in-laws, with neighbors and relatives and friends. That is grihas lifestyle. But if you look at it deeply, what does grihas really mean? Not one who lives in the household.
That's duty.
The one who perform all the duties in the true sense, sincere sense of, you see, as a father, as a brother, as a sister, all the duties you have to perform sincerely at that level. And then you need to judge which is, right now, we come in a situation in our lifetime, sometimes we don't know both the relations are the same, but we have to pick. So that sort of tricky situation comes in grihastha ashram only.
I'll give you the real definition of grihas. Grihas is not one who is living in a household. Grihas means one whom the household is living in him. Because you can even leave the household, but what happens? You carry the whole household in your mind. All your relationships, all your possessions, everything you're carrying in your mind. So grihas is not one who lives in a household. Grihas technically is one whom the household lives in. So mentally, that's why Krishna has said earlier, you don't have to become an ashram sannyasi, become a mental sannyasi. Renounce the relationships and possessions mentally by surrendering it to Lord. Right? Have that faith and that saranagati, that surrender to Lord. Because as I said earlier, by the law of karma, whatever effort you put, what has to come to you will come to you. What is not due to you, you won't get it. But you have to just put in the effort and leave the result to God. So you can even go away from the house, but the problem is the house doesn't go away from us. So that is what you have to do in time of meditation. Become a mental sannyasi. Softly, mentally, pull your mind away from all types of relationships with objects, with people, etc. Okay? So that tranquility of the mind you need to cultivate. And therefore Krishna says, manaha samyamya. Manaha samyamya means withdraw your mind from all these relationships, all the various roles that you play in life as a father, as a mother, as a grandfather, grandmother, neighbor, whatever relationships, renounce them. And if you have already been cultivating the karma yoga lifestyle, you will have definitely no problem when you come to meditation, you will be able to mentally renounce all these meditations. Sorry, all these relationships. In fact, there was an interesting article recently about people who suffered near-death experiences, who went through near-death experiences, and people who went through some kind of disease which were almost killed them, but they were cured and they came out of this disease. Whatever dreadful disease they went through, they were cured. Or those who went through death-defying experiences. And in a magazine recently I read, when these people were interviewed and they were asked, what are your goals in life now? What are your goals in life? All of them said, I want to spend more time in prayer, mm-hmm. in meditation. I want to be closer to God. I want to spend more time with family. I want to help society. Not one person said, I want a bigger house, I want a bigger car, I want to do this, I want to do that. So what happened? When they went through a death-defying experience, the whole values in life changed suddenly. Right? Their whole vision of life changed. Similarly, when we lead a spiritual life, when we lead a spiritual life, all our values, our goals in life will also change. Therefore, if you cultivate the right lifestyle, you won't find any effort when you sit in meditation. Definitely, you will be able to detach yourself away from all these different relationships that you have in the world. And you will only have that one relationship with God. So here Krishna says, Mat Chittaha. Having withdrawn your mind from the world, Mat Chittaha means the mind now invoke the relationship with God. Have thoughts about God. Cultivate and move your mind towards thoughts about God. At least during the time of meditation, understand that all other relationships you have are what? Temporary. There is only one permanent relationship in your life, and that is God. So cultivate that relationship with God. And due to our preoccupation with all the temporary relationships, we have forgotten our relationship with God. So during the time of meditation, invoke the Lord. And what else he says? Yuktaha, the mind must be fixed. Matparaha, not only Lord is the object of your meditation, matparaha means he is also the goal of your meditation. He is the highest goal. And that we should constantly keep in mind. Right? Asita, Krishna says, may you sit in such a situation. Now having disciplined your body, discipline your senses, discipline your mind. And then a few more verses to deal with meditation. And after which Arjuna will ask a question. And then Krishna will answer that question. Okay? So we come to the end of our time, and we will proceed. We'll take up verse number 15 next week when we meet again. End with the prayer.
Vasudeva sutam devam kansa chanuramardhanam devaki paramanandam krishnam vande jagat guru.
Is there anything on it?
No, Wednesday is the public holiday.
Yes, yes. Actually, Thursday also is a very auspicious day. I think it's Ramesh.